Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The age of the hero has dawned and the Elysium Project unfolds. The way of the hero posits one must utilize one's individual strengths to make one's world a better place. One need not be perfect or operating from ideal conditions either. Are not the heroes that inspire us often tragically flawed? Are their lives not in a state of flux and full of uncertainty? Does this prevent them from attempting and accomplishing great things? No, of course not. Our Age of Heroes initiatives have harnessed the creative energy and focused the attention of many heroic individuals with radically diverse backgrounds over the years, directing it towards improving the collective quality of human life. The Age of Heroes welcomes secular, intrafaith, and interfaith participation. And as with the Argonaut expedition of old, the children of different and sometimes warring gods are invited to partner with exceptional mortals to face challenges and accomplish things that really need to get done. And today we're here to celebrate one of the champions of Olympus who has been part of the Unfolding Elysium Project. I speak, of course, of Astrid. Greetings and welcome, Astrid. How are you?
Greetings and welcome, Hercules. And our listeners as well.
Yes. Happy New Year.
Yes, here we are, 2022. The numbers keep moving along.
That they do. And today we're going to honor you and reintroduce you to our audience. It's been a while since we focused on you, and it's deservedly so that we do so. So you have been involved with a lot of really awesome things and beyond the spiritual. Here on the mundane plane, you are and have been an educator. You've been involved in labor. You've been involved in local politics. So that is quite a lot of responsibility to assume for humanity. What first started your journey? How did you first decide what you wanted your life path to be?
I think sometimes we don't decide. There are little things thrown at us, and we either grab them. It's like the little birds outside, the ones that you notice, and you say, wow, like, look at that. Look who came to visit, or you just become interested in that bird. And that's what it was. It was different situations, different people, definitely different things that were said, statements that were stated that just etched themselves in your memory, and they become a part of you. Then what happens after that as you go along, you know, the different footsteps that are laid down for you will determine how you're going to place them. It's really like parts of a puzzle and how they what pieces you're given. And I have to say, you know, growing up, I grew up in a very multi-ethnic community. It was urban, and it was, still was actually the home that my grandparents had bought, with the first homes that were built on that street. So there was a real appreciation for stories, verbal stories told about what it was like to, you know, leave a country, come to another country, and the different experiences they had as immigrants. And it just amazes me, because now I see and read all these things happening to the immigrants at this stage. It brings me back to those stories, and those stories were nothing compared to the stories that you hear now. You would hope that it would get better and that people wouldn't have as many obstacles. But sadly to say, you know, it just hasn't been, the past decade has not been good to immigrants, even though there are people that would say otherwise. But just the trials and tribulations, particularly coming from very war-torn countries, you know, it's sad. It's really sad. You know, one thing to come for a better life, as my grandparents did, and more opportunities, but another thing to come to escape the physical abuse and atrocities of war. It's frightening. It really is. But that really made a very big influence growing up and hearing those stories and seeing, you know, my parents too, and hearing their stories about being first generation Americans and their goals and their dreams and how they impart them to us. Both of my parents were working class. My mom aspired to go to art school. She was a New York City girl, always in with her friends, and had a scholarship to art school. And sadly, a month before she graduated the high school, was yanked out to work, being the youngest of all the children, all the other ones leaving and having their own families. So to have a dream that close and not be able to reach it, you know, you just... That these things remind you, you know, of moments in your life and how lucky we have been to aspire to certain dreams and be able to acquire them. My dad, same thing. He was a working man, you know, in a factory and then later a head custodian. But his dream was to be a conductor.
Oh, wow. Musical conductor.
Yes, he loved classical music. And from an infant, I was raised on classical music, you know, the 78s and then eventually the 33s on the record player, and also exposed me to ballet and opera. I'm talking like 3-4 years old, and always would have me, you know, it would show me different aspects of the arts, you know, yet he was a laborer. It's amazing, you know, which also brought me to the point of thinking to myself, you never judge a book by its cover. We do not know the depths of each human being. And to make quick judgments about people based on their look, their name, you know, their race, whatever, just so wrong, because each person is a gift.
Yes.
Each person is a gift, you know, and what they choose to show us is one thing. What we learn along the way and our journeys is another. And then there are those we never learn about, you know, we never learn their gifts, but they're there, you know, just because the sun is hiding but behind the cloud doesn't mean that it does not exist, that it's not there. So I would say that my home life in the beginning was a big factor, you know, hearing all these things. And then my dad at 5 years old, he would drive me to the library every Saturday to get books. So there was a big emphasis on education, and I loved to read. And all these things were nurtured. They really were nurtured. And that's the important thing, because you could have it within you, but if it's not nurtured and
right.
Got given that water to grow like a plant, it's just not going to happen, or maybe stunted or never achieved, or maybe at a much later time. So, you know, I have to say that was a major factor. I did go to a public school, and I had a teacher in second grade who was beyond belief. She was amazing. She aspired to sharing her life with students, and it made it exciting to go to school, because here was a woman who would actually talk to us when we were in line going to the, you know, our little trips to the lavatory, and would take out her wallet and show us pictures of her husband and her daughter, and shared her family with us, and just a different approach to teaching, you know, a humanist approach. And that came back later. You know, all these little memories that you have, they come back later, because I'm thinking when I was in college, all right, I love art, I'm going to do art, but how am I going to make a living out of this? And I thought back to this teacher and the way she was and how she inspired me, you know, just to enjoy being in a classroom. And I said, well, maybe I can do that because I love art, and just as she inspired me, maybe I can find that path too. So again, all these little things that happen along your life as a child definitely has a major influence. And then social events, you know, growing up in the 60s and 70s, how could you not be aware of social reform and social injustice? And luckily I was in William Patterson College, back then Patterson State, and because it was a teaching college and also I could pursue my art career and my interests. There was a great paper called Diversitas, and it was a social and political journal. Did not state anything. It was basically what you do. They had an open forum for different ideas related to of things that were going on in the world, whether it be social injustice, whether it be in the form of poetry, whether it be in the form of photography, or one of the professors writing different things related to his class and importing knowledge to us about things that we really had no idea were happening, these things mm-hmm. that happened. So that really probably was the very beginning of being aware of the importance of political action and social interaction and making it progress to where it should be, you know, fighting for people. I had an art professor, Tom Spence, who was like mind-blowing to learn what it meant to be a dedicated artist, and he really, really imparted it, sometimes in a very hard way, but I learned what it meant to be a dedicated artist and the amount of time and effort you had to put into something. And he also was very politically involved. So there came that beginning. You know, the groundwork was laid, as you may say.
That's a good foundation to build on. I, too, come from an immigrant family, so I could identify with a lot of what you're saying. And it is difficult. Like, I'm Greek, Mediterranean. And Mediterranean Greeks were not considered white people, and they were the targets of the Klan during their early establishment in this country, like in the 40s and the 50s. And again, that seems inconceivable now that they wouldn't be considered white, because it got defined differently. But that's how it was back in the day, and they were considered duskier colored people.
Yeah, and these stories, I'm sure you have stories you can tell as well, because, it was done verbally, just passed on, and, you know, it just stayed there. And I can remember even asking, could you tell me this story again? Could you tell me that? Or how you met this particular person. And then, of course, there were always family members that came from other areas. You know, my grandma was an identical twin, and her twin lived in Australia.
Wow.
A completely different life than from a little island that she came from, an island called Selina. And her brother, because she had a brother and a sister, her brother lived in California. So all of the siblings left, obviously, for a better life. And it's amazing that the relatives in Australia started neighborhoods and owned real estate, starting from something called what they call a milk bar, which basically is like a corner store and a little cafe. And my grandma's brother had started farms, orchards in California. So completely different lives. And they never saw one another after they left their homeland. We did meet some relatives from Australia. They traveled around the world and they stopped by. I was in high school. I'll never forget it. And just completely different flavor of life. The stories were completely different. And I think that also inspired me to want to travel, to become aware of all these different places and how different their lives were.
Yes, I could identify with that as well. I remember meeting a family of my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, that he never saw again, but we tracked them down when we went to Greece. But a lot of people just lost track of their families, and their families scattered all over the place. And as you're sharing your story, I'm remembering bits and pieces of mine. So you're taking me down a tour of your memory lane and through my own memory lane as well.
Yeah, it is interesting. Now, you had visited your relatives' homelands and their place of origin. I never did. You know, this was a very small island, you know, off the coast of Italy, and my paternal grandparents were from Poland. So I've never been to Poland, and in terms of Italy, I've been there, but not to anything that resembles, you know, a homeland, you know, an island. So that's one thing I never did. I did learn a little bit of the languages, being I had grandparents that were immigrants, and they spoke, the grandparents actually never learned English. They learned minimal. So I would hear my dad speaking Polish to my grandma, and I would hear my mom speaking Italian. And of course, as I live with them, you just so curious, what are they saying? So I self-taught myself. I self-taught the language, basic languages, to try and find out what they were talking about. So there's one way to get you curious about learning.
Yes, definitely.
No two ways about it. And then luckily the high school I went to, you know, after that, the grammar school experience and then going to private school so my brother could buckle down, which was very different because it was very secular. It was basically one nationality, and here I was of two nationalities, and you didn't quite fit in. And there really was no diversity. And I remember a incident in eighth grade where this one girl came in from the Bronx. Not only was she from a completely different location, but she was as mixed as you can be. Her ethnic background was Puerto Rican, Irish, African American, Native American, and I'm sure a little splash of this and that along the way. And her first day of school, you know, we would do things on the chalkboard. She had to go up and work this very complex math problem. And this was a private school I was going to. And everything was very advanced. And if you fell behind, oh, well. This poor girl, her first day, and she's up there on the board, has no clue how to do this advanced math problem. Standing up there embarrassed, and the nun turns around and said, does anybody want to show her how to do this? No one makes a move. I was horrified for this poor girl. So I went up. I went up and I showed her how to do it. And I basically explained the process to her. And when I sat down, I felt not proud or anything, but I felt relieved for her. And I was happy that I got up and showed her how to do something and saved her from that horrific moment, because I know how I would have felt if I were up there and someone did that to me. And I think that that's another thing. It comes down to that golden rule. I always had that like drummed into me from little, you know, sort of like you'd hear these stories, Hercules, and then at the end, you would always hear that line. So just remember, as you want to be treated, so you should treat others. You don't want to be in a certain situation, don't put others in that situation. And I think that always was like in the back of my head when I would see these things happen, that I would hear that phrase. So that girl did become one of my very best friends. We became very, very close. And I was introduced to more cultures than I ever knew about. And I was totally fascinated, you know, with the different food, the different ways of dealing with certain issues, and which I have to say, when I was offered a scholarship to continue, you know, Catholic education, I turned it down. And luckily, my parents stood behind my decision, because I said, I don't want to go to school with one type of a person. And I want to be exposed to everything, not just one thing. And I was so into art and was told in that particular school, that's not a job for a woman. That's enough to make anybody you either shirk or you back up to the wall and fight back. And you can guess which one I did. So
yes,
went on to public high school and was afforded a lot of different interests. all different types of people with all kinds of backgrounds, economically, you know, racially, culturally, the things that they did and brought to the school, and a lot of clubs that I really got into, and probably the one that I loved the most was getting into the plays that they did. Of course, not on stage, but, you know, the stagecraft, building and prepping all the scenery, painting it, and then working backstage for the plays. I just found it totally fascinating. So, you know, really a wide span was offered.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what's out there and what can, like, spice up your life. What are you interested in? And that's what sort of laid the groundwork for college and the courses that I took and the professors that I met. Of course, there's always a few that just stand out in your mind who
mm-hmm.
become your mentors. You know, they're definitely your mentors. And I had a great sculpture professor, and again, my printmaking professor, Tom Spence, who also, you know, got me very involved in political action and more aware of it. So, yeah, that lays the groundwork. There's step two, and then you're out in the real world, you know, the
yep.
working world. But luckily, before I had to start working for graduation from college, I was asked, what do you want? And I said, I really want to go to Europe, and I want to do it my way. And I luckily had a very good friend who did a semester abroad in Denmark, and there laid the plans. You know, we got a rail pass, took out a mini loan based upon a school contract that I had pending, and we basically went all over Europe doing research, because we were both big researchers. So we did all the research. You know, my first plane ride was with Icelandic. You know, stopped at Reykjavik, Iceland, which no one heard of back then. It was not the place to go to. And then went on to Denmark. And from Denmark, you know, to Greece and England and Yugoslavia and Germany, you know, all over. And of course, you find countries that you just cannot believe the influence they have upon you, or that you feel you belong there. Whether you were there another lifetime or what, you just feel a bond. And that definitely was, you know, England. I loved England and Greece. Oh, it was, as I've said many times before, the magical moment of my life was sitting on a stone block within the Parthenon. It's like the most intense moment I have ever had. It was just life-changing.
Yes, you've shared that, and I appreciate it. And again, you're painting pictures with words, so you're the artist even when you're talking, and you're conjuring up pictures and feelings and emotions. Now, you continued teaching throughout your entire career, is that correct? So you helped encourage
and,
other.
And again, Hercules, you think you know what you want, and mm-hmm. then sometimes life throws you a little curve. I was first offered a long-term sub job, and I wanted to teach high school art. I had several interviews, and I basically was told by a principal, it would never happen today in this day and age, but back then, and as you know, I taught for 39 years, so which is very inconceivable back then when you start. But yeah, I was told, no, there's no way I would put you in high school, you know, with high school boys at your age. You know, and I was highly insulted, because I'm thinking of it in terms of, you know, my skills, where I was at that point in college, you know, a higher level of learning of art and what I could impart to the students. Instead, I was offered a position with grades K through 6, and I was, you know, very hesitant about it, wondering, how am I going to bring art down to that where I am in art, down to their level? So the first year was you know, an eye-opener in the beginning. But you find that they're so receptive. And again, as much as you're teaching and you're experiencing things with them, they impart a lot to you, too. And when I left the school, my parting words were, you may miss me, but I'm going to miss you just as much. And everything that you thought I taught you, it was equaled in an algebraic equation with such and such, one side of the algebraic equation equals, and then there's another one. I said, well, they are perfectly balanced. No two ways about it, because you do learn from kids, and you either sink or swim, as they say, but you're constantly learning. Just like they're learning, you were constantly learning. So, yes, teaching was interesting, and the politics within the town was interesting. I had no interest in getting involved with the union at that point in my life, because in your 20s, you're very self-absorbed, and you're thinking about where you're going and what you're doing, not what you can do for other people. You know, I did start a program in the school with kids that were gifted, where we would write our own scripts based upon a theme. It was very equalized. So like, okay, what should we do? What are the different ideas? How can we unify the arts? And we would put on these little shows around a theme, and we would pick the music, we would create our own dances, made the scenery, did the costumes. It was, you know, a fun experience because it was sharing with them as artists. You know, we were all equal. As artists, so that was really great. And they're my dad's words, there you go, those things that are etched into your mind and your heart and your soul. I grew up seeing my dad as a shop steward, and I remember him going to meetings and holding meetings and union strikes. It's something I grew up with. You know, we were allowed to hear these things. So when things started happening within the system, I would be very interested, but I still never took part in it. And then there was a point when, you know, it just all clicked. And it was seeing this, again, seeing this one particular girl, because in the beginning I taught art in two schools, and she was an African-American in a school of, I'd say, mostly Caucasian teachers, and you know, a little splatter here and there of some different cultures, but she was the best union rep. She would be at our meetings, and she would inform us of everything and anything that happened, which didn't happen in most schools. And I was always so impressed with her, the way she, you know, relayed all the information and brought it to us. It was just like you do, you know, having a platform, showing us everything and saying, take what you need. But if you need help in this area, here's an option. If you need, you know, if you need to know more about benefits or insurance or whatever, you know, here's the information. She always was there with her wise words and her wisdom and her information. Yet she was never given the due respect. And at one point she even, you know, she had contacted me because it was an older school, this one particular school, and the chalkboard came flying off the wall. This particular school was, you know, ancient. And all she thought about was saving that child from getting hit. And she moved in front and put her body in between the child and the board, and she suffered injuries. That is unbelievable. Yet, and there we go, those three letters. Yet, the administrator gave her so much trouble in terms of being out and about workman's comp, the fact she wanted to do a workman's comp case and all this. And I remember her calling me and just crying about it. And I said, no. No, we're writing a letter. And that was the beginning for me. We're writing a letter, and we're going to deal with this. And from that point on, I became a rep in the other school that I was in and got very involved. But I also learned, you know, you have to be a humanist. You're dealing with people. You need to see things from every spot, every perspective. So, you know, you're going in to represent someone, and yes, that's your duty as a rep, you know, to abide by the contract and protect workers' rights. But at the same time, you learn about all the situations in the building, you know, what each person may have said or done in a better way. And there's always a thing called conflict resolution. You know, not really saying, you're not blaming anyone and saying, well, let's look at it this way, let's look at it that way. And you're becoming a lawyer, basically, and you're protecting people's rights, but you also cannot let them abuse the situation. And you have to bargain out situations. So you try and make it work for everyone. That's the best approach, making things work for everyone. And I became an executive within the union, and at another point I was an intermediary between the staff and the administration by being an instructional counsel. And it's just a way of relaying information back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, things get lost in the process. You know,
yes.
When there's too much of a gap, people on top have no clue what it's like to be working in a certain situation, because they're looking at it from a different perspective. And at the same point, people that are working from a certain perspective have no idea what it's like to be an overall leader and have a multitude of things to be taking under their wing. It's not just one thing. And I did my job. You know, at one point I was lucky enough to be in one school. I usually traveled. Sometimes I had a room and sometimes I didn't. And you go with the flow, as they say, and you become very inventive and resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, I had an administrator who was totally mind-blowing. Here came this woman, small, little, petite woman, who was a powerhouse of energy and had the ability to stimulate you as an educator, all because she included you and listened.
I'm glad you had her.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah,
you know, all of a sudden, everybody mattered. The kids mattered. The parents mattered. Tied things together with parents, brought a system called the Comer system, where parents were aware of the rules of the building and knew there were consequences and rewards, that everyone was respectful, and all of a sudden behavior problems, well, they didn't go away, obviously, because it's a growing experience. But they became less and they became manageable. And here was a woman that put committees together with representatives from every area. Every area. So that we could all, not just for her, so she would make the wise decision in the end, but so that we could all learn from one another what the other person experiences and what the dilemmas and the pitfalls and the advantages are in each situation that was so different. And all of a sudden you have like some input where before you're just the art teacher. What do you know? You know, and we were brainstorming constantly. You know, ways we could make things better for the children. You know, ways we can work with the parents. Programs for the parents. You know, I had a lending library with books in multi languages for parents. I would go on conferences and turnkey back for the art teachers. You know, do professional development. And I love sharing it with them because, you know, if one of us can go, then all of us will benefit from it. But then I'd also bring it back for the parents and for the classroom teachers in terms of, like, ordering materials, you know, try this material, you know, try this particular art supply, see what you think about it. You know, and I find this works better, and this is a better manipulative tool for a child of this age. And it was just sharing what we knew. Those
That's
years were really, but not every school in the system had that. You know, I was blessed enough to have this woman come into this building and change the way we education, you know, making modifications, doing word walls that would excite the kids, you know, getting on the intercom with a theme. You know, one year we did the medieval theme, and the whole entire school went to medieval times.
Awesome.
To experience it, you know. And then at the end of the year, we did all these things where we related all the projects to it in one way or the other, whether, you know, it was through writing or, you know, their math skills, or our VP who got on the intercom and would give us the word of the day. And, you know, hear you, you know. Why can't learning be exciting? All of a sudden, the kids were like, wow, this is really interesting. And whether it be a drawing project or like a book report done in a format like a castle, or math problems done that way. That was before the copy machines came into place.
I remember.
Yeah, you do. Oh, gosh, I remember the really early ones with the ink and then the paper.
Yes.
But, you know, it doesn't have to be boring. You know, you could make
right.
And then it's exciting. Once you're excited, let me tell you, it just is contagious. The kids were excited, and the ends of the shows, you know, everybody, the parents were invited in, the community was invited in. One year we did it on media, and we got into the history of film and theater, and we made the school into a theater. We had all different aspects of theater and learning aspects on the wall of what career awareness, each mm-hmm. career that related to the theater or to film. The custodians and I were on the second floor. I built this little marquee, you know, number three school presents. And we climbed out the window and put it on the overhang. So there are the two custodians and I climbing through the window, you know, and we're placing it out there with these little fake lights and put the chairs out there to sit and arrange it. And you look back now and you think, wow, I can't believe we did these kind of things. But the joy and the pleasure in doing it and in knowing the excitement when people came to school and saw this.
I'm losing you in and out a little bit, Astrid. I'm getting like short periods of silence and then regular sound. It's happened like four or five times.
And you know, it's not even on the cell phone because I don't even use the cell phone here in the mountain range. So I'll make sure I sit in one position, and if this is working, I'm going to stay this way for the remainder of our time together.
I appreciate
that.
Yeah. I have a hard time sitting still, so I.
Well, I fidget around with my arthritic bones every so often. So, uh-huh. So the school, the place where you find yourself, your job has so much to do with your growth and the people that you meet. And, of course, I got involved at one point then on the county level, and then my experiences with unions and politics, per se, grew because you're going to all these events and you're meeting all these different politicians and you're promoting the cause and you're looking to have certain bills passed and, you know, you're basically, you know, you're a PAC, Political Action Committee,
mm-hmm.
on two feet. But it was very exciting because you had a chance to make a difference in a big way by meeting with these people and listening to them and you speaking to them or doing certain kind of activities, helping other districts when they went on strike. I remember being in Wayne, you know, working with them to get a fair contract. And, of course, with board members, you know, learning the process involved with being a board member. Again, seeing it from different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so
and campaigning.
Like the other things you mentioned, this happened organically, and it's like one thing led to another, and boom, there's your new path.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing how all these things, you know, build like going up a staircase.
Mm-hmm.
And then besides being vertical, it's also horizontal. So your growth is vertical, but then you start meeting people in because of that, in the networking, and you start to see, you get more involved with community events, and you see people change in terms of some politicians who become more fervent and those that become more lax because they're feeling very comfortable, which can be, in all fairness, not just politicians, in any profession.
Right.
In any profession, you know, I remember in my early years of teaching at a group meeting where the teachers were speaking with the principal and they're saying, oh, those special area teachers, we weren't even called that then. We were called itinerant teachers. How about that? That is basically an extra, like art was considered an extra back then, and you traveled between two schools. So you really didn't belong to one particular school. So, you know, it made you feel like some kind of a farmhand or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just brought in a truck to go to different places. That made an impact on me. And I remember saying to that particular teacher who said that and then turned and looked at me and said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean you. I mean those other special teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned around. And, of course, I couldn't let that go. And I said, why does it make a difference if a person is a classroom teacher or an itinerant? And she just looked at me. Well, I said, no. What I'm saying to you is I would be the same person and treat my job the same way, whether I was an art teacher, a gym teacher, the school nurse, or a fifth grade classroom teacher. I would put the same energy into it because that's who I am as a person.
Right. That's who you are.
Right. I said, so why are you saying this person or that person? That person would be a horrible classroom teacher if they did not do their job well as a special area, and vice versa. You know, you want to be there to develop yourself, but also your profession, and also give back to the community. You know, make your impact on a child, whether it be their skills in art or as a human being. They come in, they've had a bad day, or you know, someone's bullying them or whatever. You know, you stand up for them. You tell them it will be all right, and I'm here for you. That's what it's about.
That is what it's about.
So
go ahead.
And I'm sure you saw that in the many professions that you've been in, you know, that's what makes the job worthwhile and endears the job to you and vice versa. You know, you to the job and the people that you work with, you know, that they appreciate you. And you don't think it at times when you're going through it,
mm-hmm.
but then things happen, whereas I had, as you know, I'm no longer on Facebook, but in the very beginning I was on Facebook, and some students of mine that were all grown up from the one school invited me. They had a little reunion, and they invited me to join them.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And I was so touched. And we reminisced the different stories and you know, all the students and things that we enjoyed about the school and what made it fun. So these are the things that make it all worthwhile. Even when you have a bad day, you think back and you say, wow, you know, wasn't that wonderful to run into this student or that student and, you know, it does make you grin from ear to ear that you were able to put a smile on someone's face and that what they did in your room meant something to them, that they carried it through.
Yes, I get contacted, well, not now, but in Pennsylvania even, I would get contacted by old students of various levels. And I remember them when they were kids, and here they were bringing their girlfriends or their wives and remembering things that we did during the time of instruction. And again, you know that you've affected lives in a positive way, and that people remember and that people appreciate it. So that is really what it's all about.
Most definitely, most definitely. And then I got, from going to these different events on the county level, as I said, I campaigned. I would sell tickets to dinners, like for things for PAC. And if I firmly believed in a politician, I would work for him. And just as like up in here, we have Josh Gottheimer, who is a Democrat, but so bipartisan, works with both parties. And the thing that amazes me about him is that you give him a call, he actually picks up the phone, even his cell phone. And as I've said, when we've mentioned different situations up in the county, we had a problem with power outages, you know, on our particular lake. He not only looked into it, he acted. you know, all of a sudden they started doing prep work and trimming trees so there wouldn't be as many outages due to down wires, down trees. Vernon, with that dump that was there for how many years? And the poor people, what they endured trying to get that man who was using his property as a dump site. He was contacted and he jumped on it, and that was taken care of. It went to the beyond New Jersey EPA. It went to, you know, to the higher level, you know, beyond the county, out of the state. He got things going. And the same with the issue with the subacute nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
When COVID started and people couldn't even contact their relatives. They didn't even know what was happening. Some of them were so upset, they contacted him, and he looked into it, and they got people involved, and they found that there was a trailer with 17 bodies piled in there. And, of course, he started the movement to making these places accountable, like looking into it. Also did the same with Vets Homes. And he was responsible, sponsored quite a few bills, but one was the seatbelt safety law, so that there would never be situations where buses would not have seatbelts and children would not go through what they had gone through in the past with some horrific accidents. And he just recently had this thing called Hometown Heroes for the 5th District, which is where Representative Josh Gottheimer serves. He honored local first responders, veterans, students, life-saving bystanders, volunteers, and community leaders.
Awesome.
And he had the ceremony in a community center. It was in Fairlawn because he also served them on December 20th. And he took the time to honor them. And I think that's just so wonderful that he did that. And there were quite a few. Yeah. Yeah, and he presented awards to more than 30 of them due to their dedication to helping to improve the lives of their neighbors, families, and the communities. And I'm going to take this moment to say their names because need to honor these people. Mike Rose from Green Township. He's the township fire chief. He did much work, and it's vital throughout the multiple catastrophic weather events. Virgil Rome from Freedon, he started working as a detective for the prosecutor, retiring after serving as an undersheriff and dedicated his life to serving the county. Highly dedicated. He came back 2 years later as emergency management coordinator. So as you say, some people just keep moving along, you know, they keep building on that. Tony Serbo III from Branchville provided hundreds of military families with Christmas trees through their Trees for Troops program, worked with the community at the Serbo's Greenhouse and Garden Center, and provided situations for residents to chip in and give back to those who always have our backs. And I know that family personally. My son went to school with one of their sons. Wonderful people. Justine Van Blarcombe from Vernon, working to support the troops and veterans, and she manages the Wreaths Across America program in the cemetery. Joe Hessian from Mountain Lakes, and he is the president and CEO of Snow Operating. He partners with the Chill Foundation to help youth through outdoor activities. He's also donated $50,000 to fight the opioid crisis, helped small businesses get loans through pandemic, and also founded a nonprofit that increases awareness and education related to drug and alcohol addiction. Eddie Minlin from Franklin Borough, he's a proud veteran. He is now 96 years old.
Wow.
How about that? And he was a part of the force that was preparing to invade Okinawa when the war ended and became part of the post-war occupational force and a space committee. So talk about major impact. And here he is,
yeah.
96. Marsha Bradley from Stillwater, a tireless volunteer, started community emergency cert chapters in Stillwater, Frankfurt, Hampton, and she helps at every flu clinic, warming shelters, and vaccine sites. Here you go. She holds the record for more volunteer hours in the county fairgrounds for the COVID vaccine site. Sergeant Joseph DeAnabale from Newton, longtime Newton officer, who stopped the building from burning. He broke into the garage. He put out the fire before the building burned down. How about that? You know, no self worry or interest. Just go and take care of it. Susie Marr from Washington Borough, she organizes cleanups throughout the borough and along the Shabakon Creek, making sure that this environment stays pristine. And she's on many borough boards, all a part of her work to make the town a better place. How nice to be appreciated. So we say, you know, that makes a difference. And not that you're looking for that. It's just that someone stood up and noticed that you're doing this out of the goodness of your heart and that you want to do it. That's a big thing. I was lucky enough to be honored. You know, and for me, I find it very hard to be, and I think most of us do, to be in front of a big group and have, mm-hmm. you know, all these accolades put on. But I was honored as a community, as a teacher of the community. I think it might have been right as I was retiring. And here I was in a room where I sat very often, honoring politicians, honoring other people, yet here I was standing up there with politicians listening to, you know, what I've done for the community and my students and just the town I worked in and the county I worked in, how important it was to me. And it's nothing compared to what others have done. But yet, you know, Joe Sheff took, the county president took the time to say thank you in this way to me. And I think that's what it comes down to, Hercules.
Yeah.
You do for people because you want to do it. But it is so nice to be heard and for someone to say, wow, you know, you really put effort in this. You know, you really cared about this and we noticed it. It's the same with from when you're a kid and someone gives you praise that is due.
Mm-hmm.
It is the same when you are a teacher working those years and nobody really cares what your thoughts are or what ideas you might bring to the table, and you have a principal that says, let's work together and let's share ideas. And
mm-hmm.
these ideas will work if we work together. And it's the same when you're leading a school system that you've been in for 39 years, and they're honoring you, and you turn around and say, no, you made the difference, because you learned from me, but boy, did I learn from you, and the parents, and from other teachers. It is a group effort. No one stands alone. There are always people holding you up. And if you achieve anything, and if you've done anything that's, you know, admirable, it's because that there are people there that showed you the way or enabled you to do it.
And you've done the same. You've showed people the way, and you've enabled them to do it. And that is an awesome and incredible thing. And as we near the end of today's conversation, again, I want to say that we're honoring you today for everything you've done for this particular adventure. Some of the things you've done, like the Sussex Report, that's shared so much positivity. I love today where you shared the heroes of your community. In this way, they can get additional recognition and appreciation, because they are heroes, and it's the age of heroes. So I want to thank you for everything, Astrid. You're a remarkable woman doing remarkable things, and I'm very fortunate that our paths crossed and that we found ways of working together.
Oh, most definitely. And you have definitely added to my life as well, Hercules. You were there with rekindling my interest in the gods, bringing my meditation to new place, and working alongside you for awareness and communication. It is so important.
Yes, and the best is yet to come. The adventure is just the beginning.
That's right.
Contact you through me, right? If they're interested in contacting
Yes. I will be putting a website together somewhere along this year, which will make it easier, and where I can put blurbs there of things that are interesting, whether it be related to meditation or social programs or even just, little tidbits of people or programs that people might be interested. You know, we all get these emails, and every once in a while you find a couple that are like, wow, is amazing, what they impart. And, I share that with a few friends, but it would be nice to share it with our listeners as well. So I will make a very concerted effort to do that. In the meantime, it's going your way.
And I gladly share it. I'm sharing the one that you sent me today on the morrow when I catch up with some of the internet things.
Yes, new things are happening in Sussex County, as we see, and new shops are opening, and that makes me happy.
Yes, it's always good if the economy is stimulated, especially now with the pandemic and the new variant that seems to be ravaging the world.
Right. And we have to keep that positive flow. And there are so many things that are going on, like, music venues up here. It's tough, being isolated inside. But if, you look at these different places, and I'll send them along to your email. There are so many venues up here, and you make the call. But this is the information, and some require a mask, some don't. Some places, if you go earlier, it's easier. Like, there are different breweries and that have music, and there are places where it's, you make the choice. The listeners make the choice whether it works for them. And again, like that new business, the cake pop place that's opening on Valentine's Day, how exciting. And the artwork on these things, it's magnificent. So that'll be Valentine weekend opening, from the Friday to the Monday, not just Saturday and Sunday. So that's in Branchville. And it must be right near the bookshop, I would tend to think.
Oh, wow.
Which is
a
great
asset. A while.
That bookshop is amazing.
Yes.
So many great things. We've got to find our little happiness here and there while we stay safe.
And that's a perfect place to wrap up today. The robot voice informed me that we have less than a minute left. Astrid, again, thank you so very much. You're awesome. And may you continue to be awesome and share your gifts with the world.
Thank you, and thank you for giving people the opportunities to do so. You are a blessing, Hercules.
Thank you very much, and thanks to everybody who tuned in. Whether you called and you're sitting in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be exploring our on-demand episodes and finding us there, Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And, of course, a healthy and happy year. Be well, everybody. Good night, Astrid. Thanks again.
Good night once again.